One of them wanted to be the security guy. He claimed he was a security guy.
Welcome, everybody, to a very interesting version of Security Guy Radio today. After much ado and many technical issues, I'm very happy to have a special guest who's going to talk about robotics in the security industry. And really, I think this is where it's all going. This is what's going to replace regular guards, and it's going to be here a lot sooner than we think. So here's my special guest with Robo Alliance, and I want to welcome Mr. Todd Kliparis. Welcome, Todd. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Glad we could do this today.
So finally, we had a lot of false starts, but we're all ready to go. So tell me what Robo Alliance is.
Robo Alliance is a group of experts in the robotics field that have gotten together that want to promulgate good information about why robots are going to be leading, exactly like you said, in security, in maritime awareness, in mining, in lots of different applications.
And it's not a, it's comprised of a bunch of different businesses and people that aren't necessarily all in the robot business, per se, but they may have some component in their business, right?
Correct.
So what's your, like, mission statement? What's the goal?
The goal is to help people understand the value of robotics in multiple different categories. So ideally, every month, people get a new white paper or they get new information from someone in the field that's got a very good use case. It may be something related to a specific threat they've addressed, or maybe even a situation that was averted because of a robotic system. So the Alliance itself is designed to bring together the best mind share in the industry and then disseminate that information among people that are interested in learning about how robots work.
Very cool. So have you heard of ONVIF, the people that do the camera standards and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah. So is that kind of a, in a loose sense, is that kind of one thing you guys do, is kind of bring these brain trusts together and kind of come up with some ideas and standards and best practices and that kind of stuff?
That's the idea. Correct.
All right. So we were talking before the show, you sent me an article the other day about the marijuana business. And it seems to me that would be the perfect business to do robotics in, but you tell me maybe not so. A little resistance on that. Tell about the business and how what are people trying to do with it?
So it's challenging because the industry itself is nascent in some respects because technology has just not been adopted. You've got guys that have been doing this industry for 30, 40, 50 years in the United States, and they're still up in the mountains with a shotgun and trying to protect their land and their crops. And the difference is in California, you've got very large venture capital groups that have spent hundreds of millions of dollars already. I think this year alone, they've spent close to $700 million trying to develop the California space. And that's a significant amount of money that goes towards infrastructure, new buildings. For instance, in Desert Hot Springs in Southern California, there's over 200 locations that have already been bought. The average cost per land here, the average acre, was about $5,000 2 years ago. Now it's $500,000.
Are you serious? I should have bought out there. I bought in Palm Desert instead.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Desert Hot Springs was always had a reputation for the other side of the tracks out there, right? And, the mayor had some corruption issues and all that kind of stuff. But that's remarkable. Now, what really boggles my mind on this is I think of an analogy with regular security purchasers. You know, when I was in the guard business, mm-hmm. trying to sell people guard service, it's like, well, you know, we have our clerks that handle that, and I don't know if we need guards. And here's an industry that has billions of dollars, but they still have old school thinking. I just find that kind of remarkable, because if anybody had the money to buy the robots, it'd be that business. So it's a cultural thing? Is that what it
sure.
is, the resistance?
I think it's a cultural thing, and then there's also a banking relationship issue that you fall into, because there's a federal guideline that says banks are not able to really finance and or lease or take funds from some of the people in the industry,
which
makes it difficult to finance large applications like this one, because a typical robot can run couple hundred thousand dollars, and a grow site may not be able to afford that, versus where they could pay out on a lease at $20 an hour or $18 an hour or whatever the cost may be.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Tell us what the industry is looking for in robots nowadays. I mean, what's their, you know, what's the end game? Is it something out of the Jetsons or a drone? Or, I mean, what is it?
There's actually quite a few applications already that have been developed inside for the agricultural purposes. Very similar to, you may have heard of Kiva, which was bought for about $900 million for Amazon, which did its robotics on the inside, which would be inventory level.
Oh, yeah.
Then you've got other applications where you've got the trimming and the agricultural side, and ours where you have security on the outside, which is, you know, if you're in the desert and it's 129 degrees, you're not going to want to have a guy sitting out there all day long because
right.
he'll get fried. Or up north where it gets cold, or they're tired at night, or, you know, guarding, as you'd said, and you've done it before as a business. Some of the guys don't show up on time. They're playing on Twitter. They're, you know, they have Facebook issues, or their girlfriend told them that they were breaking up with them, and then they don't show up for work. So there's lots of different things in the guarding world that just don't make sense. This business specifically, the robotic business, is taking effect. It is having an effect on the industry. We actually have sites that want to go live right now. Five in Desert Hot Springs area that are all very, very good clients, and most of them are funded by multi-million dollar backing.
But it's this relationship with the bank thing that it's a lot of cash.
Correct.
And how do they reconcile or handle the conflict with the federal law? Because it's still federally against the law. That may be where the banks had the problem. Is that probably right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. What else can we do with robots nowadays? Tell us something, tell us a success story of how some of these things are working. I used to have Idea Lab in Pasadena as my client. And one day about 7 or 8 years ago, they called up and says, Chuck, we're making a guard robot. Come out here and talk about it. And I spent 8 hours talking to this guy about it. They wanted to sell them for $120,000 a piece. And I said, no, guard company's not going to pay $120,000. They might lease it and so on.
Nope.
How is the industry evolving? I mean, is it going to get to, the robot from Lost in Space that walks around and tell it what to do? Or is it, I like the drone idea a lot better. That seems like a better application for robots in car business.
Yeah, agreed. You know, to have a security patrol go out, one of the things I dealt with before, because I had worked in robotics for a naval application for the maritime side, was you have to have something that will alert, you know, let you know that there's something going on. Versus where if you're dealing with a robot like on a patrol level, you need to have sensors that are up in front of it for depth of defense. So somebody will know, hey, there's a gate that's open or there's a CO2 sensor that's off or whatever. And these bots are getting smarter. I think the first generation of them that are out there right now are patrol and report, which is a typical guarding function anyways, which is fine. But you
right.
have to have them do other services so that it becomes a value add that they can't walk away from.
So tell me what the difference is, and this is I think it's a subtle difference, right? But let's see, how could I get this right? What's the difference between a robot that goes around and takes pictures and alerts you to things and tells you what's going on, and the sophisticated camera systems that now have video analytics that can literally say, oh, Chuck, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and a brown car came on your property and this is the make and model. And it's all done through the analytics, not a person viewing the video, right? I see, you know, more video analytics as being superior in a way to a robot, but I'm talking about a patrol robot and you're talking about drones. Clear my mind up on that, on those two things.
So you got a very good point. We work with PlateSmart now, which is a fantastic company that does AI based on software. You may have.
Oh, I've interviewed them. Oh, I've interviewed them twice. They're great.
Yeah. Yep. So PlateSmart is actually going to be part of our integration for a complete system. I think that if you're one-legged, you're very insecure. And I think if you can have a multi-tiered approach where you're using both AI, artificial intelligence, along with the analytics that can come from a bot, you're never going to have a camera that's going to have sensors on it that'll detect radiation. Or it may be very difficult to do because a camera is going to be farther up and above or away, where a robot can have multiple sensors, multiple abilities to interdict. So you could have a robot that can actually go right up to the person and potentially alert them verbally, so I could have a person on the back end say, look, we just called the police, you better leave because they're going to be here. Response time is within 2 minutes. We're going to video you till you leave. And you can have all the cameras from everywhere around that pointed towards that bot.
Yeah, it makes sense. And then you got to write some laws that say if you smash a robot, it's a bigger offense. Because in California, you know, you're not going to go to jail for doing anything. You know,
it wouldn't work.
You know, one of my favorite shows, I don't know if you've ever seen it, is Westworld. Have you seen that on HBO, the new one? So it's, oh, did I lose your audio there for a second? Are you there?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. I'm fascinated by the ethics involved in this, right? Because those robots, they're robots, but we'll be there someday at that level where we can have robots that you can't distinguish between a guy and a robot, right? But the ethics involved, artificial intelligence, the ethics, I mean, has anybody looked at these sort of things as laws yet? Are laws starting to be developed about who owns a robot? Who owns the intellectual property of a robot? What can you program it to do and not do? And you know, do we have the scientific or sci-fi thou shalt not hurt a human thing programmed into that so they don't attack us? You know?
Sure. The core principles of the robot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so there have been an awful lot of discussions already. There's a couple of forums that are out there. There's actually quite a few books that have been written. One of the authors is part of a think tank that I'm aware of that has been talking through with the military for years to be able to discern when is a drone able to make its own decision. Because if you can think about how we're using drones now, it's typically for a carpet bomb. You know, you send the drone up and the guy's sitting remotely and he can go through an area, level it and come back out, and he's back sitting in his chair 2 hours later and the drone did all the work. So there's not a lot of discerning of information through that. Whereas conversely, if you see in South Korea, it's the only place on the planet right now that has an autonomous system that is a machine gun turret that has no human interaction with it. So you go near that turret, it lets you know you better move away. Otherwise, it starts to fire. That's a lot different.
No way. It makes its own decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's a different level of autonomy that is not available for security guard robots yet. I think that it hopefully will never get to the stage where we're going to let that control go into an artificial intelligence environment, because it's just kind of it's nebulous and kind of tricky.
Right. So let's talk about the concept of singularity, right? I was at Secure World last year in Seattle, talked to a guy named from Radware, Herberger, Carl Herberger, one of these, you know, smartest guys in the room guys. He says, you know, they've done the math, they've hired the mathematicians, and mathematicians say in 20 years we'll reach what they call a singularity where, as you just said, a robot, artificial intelligence, a computer network gets a command, and then it waits, and then it says, I'm not waiting around for a command anymore. I'm going to go find a command on the web, or I'm going to create a command, or I'm going to write my own code, right? Because open source is so big now. About 80% of all code is open source, really. It's kind of out there. And then he says, you know, by a certain time, anything that can or will be written will have been written. Because, you know, 1 million monkeys typing 1 million times a day becomes everything. So how worried are we about that? I mean, you know, if you can turn the robot on and off, that's fine. But if they're hardwired to an internet and they decide to do their own things, I think that Terminator stuff is kind of a real possibility. What do you guys think about it? I mean, I'm sure you guys sit around at the table at Robo Alliance and say, you know what, we got to worry about that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There is a certain level of, if you listen to proponents of, let's call it larger thought, right? If you go and you talk to people in the robotics industry, or if you're speaking to people that have been doing this a very long time, there is a fear. It's an innate fear that the machine may get too smart. And I think there is a real possibility that towards the future, you could have things that are thinking beyond where our comprehension may want to lead. And so that needs to be built in, and it actually has to be almost like a universal guideline. Otherwise, you're going to have real problems as these things become more ubiquitous, when they're everywhere. When you've got them, when you do, you know, everything from your Roomba that does your, you know, your floors, where a larger Roomba is patrolling your house and one's outside, and now they're talking together and figuring out when you're not home to, you know, secure the house, you know. So
yeah. Well, you wouldn't even know it's out there if it's its own thing and hiding and stuff.
Sure.
I mean, we have enough problems right now with people hacking. Hacking's not a great word, but, you know, getting access to our networks because some IT guy's lazy. That's what I like to call it instead of hacking. But we do have enough problems in cyber attacks and such. So I could see it being something we cannot control eventually. And that gives me a little concern. Do you even want to go there? But, you know, the robots that make the cars and the robots that do automation, yeah, that's all good. But on theory, they could all be on the network. And they could all be live one day too. You know, now,
yeah,
distinguish a drone from a robot. I used to think a drone's a drone, but really you could say a drone is a robot, couldn't you?
Yeah. I was working with a company called Liquid Robotics, which has been purchased by Boeing, and they would say that they had a floating unmanned system that would patrol oceans across the globe. And we were able to set up some very large naval applications for navies, right? But it was basically a floating controlled, like remote controlled car. You know,
right,
it never really had a lot of autonomy. Now they're building autonomy into it, and there are really great systems to do that. Some of the systems today, a drone, for instance, that you can go down to the store and buy from DJI or whoever, will fly up for 30 minutes or 40 minutes and come down. It doesn't really have an awful lot of autonomy. So a robot, a typical robot, has a pre-programmed mission. And that mission may be to move a piece of product from one part to another, or it may be to do a certain task, and it does that specifically very, very well. And that may be for agricultural. So there's a company called Harvest AI that has an agricultural robot that goes around and picks up plants and moves them between certain locations and saves an awful lot of money versus hiring people like an immigrant to come in and move the plants. That's a very simple application.
Right.
Versus if you have something that's a patrol robot that works off of, let's call it an encrypted Wi-Fi, so military-grade encrypted Wi-Fi that would be on a patrol route that randomizes all the time. So it's still, what are the nuances behind how that will report? So a drone typically is not as autonomous. It would be just similarly what you'd see in the news where the drone strike just hit and it was all about that drone. Well, that's controlled by a human, whereas an autonomous platform or a robot will have a non-pre-programmed route, will do a certain mission or task and completes that task within a certain amount of time.
So I kind of have this this evil genius thing about me where I like to think of worst case scenarios and plan evil things. And I've always thought that instead of spending $60 billion on one jet, we should just go build a whole bunch of Cessnas and fly 1 million of them at the same time somewhere, and you'd never be able to shoot them down. It'd just be an impossibility, right? It's just too many of them. You just can't do it. So volume.
Yeah.
So now I'm thinking in the drone world, are we going to get to a point where we don't need soldiers? We literally program a bunch of drones, like that guy did in New York. I don't know if you heard about that, but he flew a drone remotely without control by programming it to hit all the Starbucks hotspots, and he flew all through New York until he got to the end. So I'm in the military, and I'm just going to put out a whole bunch of these drones, and I'm going to put out 1 million of them, and I'm going to create a swarm, and I'm just going to go wreak havoc on North Korea. I mean, tell us about some, if you know, without disclosing secrets, any of the military and how they're using robots and where they're going with it. I mean, we got the obvious things for bomb control and stuff like that, but are they thinking about weaponizing millions of these things and looking at robots that way? Well, I guess Terminator is a good way to describe it.
Yeah, like an iRobot Terminator. So
exactly.
Roomba with guns, you know. No, but I mean, so if you look at, that's a good example. If you look at iRobot, which was, and still is probably one of the most deployed manned surface robot units called an iRobot or a PACBOT, which was used in the military for quite some time. They spun that division off. So iRobot no longer has the military version. It's now called Endeavor Robotics, and they're still selling to the military, and they're still deploying an awful lot of those bots. But those are still almost like drones. They're not robots. They don't go out and do a specific mission like we're talking about. You have to control them for minesweeping and everything else. Now, could they take that platform and give it a mission and let it go forward? If you look at Boston Electronics, which is the company that was acquired by Google that has the Mule, which is that robotic unit that will run like 70 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's freaky.
That's pretty fantastic. I mean, you can see that you're getting an awful lot of advancement in robotics when that'll happen.
Yeah.
So there is a good side. You know, you do have the benefit where robotics on a small end may be able to help people that are impaired, like paralyzation. So you have the exoskeleton suits that are all robotic that'll help people walk. Then you've got the and units that'll do something else. Now, could you make a fleet or a very large autonomous marine protected robotic unit? Maybe that's why Boeing bought Liquid Robotics.
Now, don't disclose any secrets here on Skeptic Guy Radio. I already had the FBI look at my website a couple times, so I got to be careful. But that does seem logical.
No. Yeah, I mean, you know, you see the benefit there. I mean, if you have a silent platform that uses wave power with no fuel and it can go anywhere and it can tow 1,000 pounds, what would you do with it?
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, nobody likes war. Nobody likes all that kind of stuff. But if you're honest with yourself, where does the most advances in all our technology come from? They all came from the war. Almost without exception, right?
Sure.
Let's figure out a way to kill people the most effectively. You know, we're done with that. Let's give it to everybody else to use. And that's what happens. So you got to look at the positive side on stuff like that. Tell me some things that that you're passionate about in this business. Now, you have your own company. You're with another company. Tell us what that is.
Okay. The company's Hard Car Security. We're based out of California. We cover the entire state, so we go from Northern California to Southern California. Our focus is primarily on supporting the medical cannabis space. So we help in securing facilities with everything from cybersecurity, which you were just talking about, all the way down into robotics and this type of advanced, I call it next generation security, because we're really changing the space.
So how is it that you have a non-robotic company that you got interested in robots? Because I read on the website, a lot of the people that are on Robo Alliance don't necessarily have a specific background in robotics. Some do, right? A lot do. But there's a lot of people that just, it's a think tank of all kinds of different people. I find that very interesting.
Thanks. So I lived in China for about 15 years, and I was building a lot of technology over in Shenzhen, China. One of the things that I was working on at one point, this is years ago, was a robotic system to patrol large facilities, and it just never went to market.
Interesting.
I was actually working on that about 10 years ago, and then about 5 or 6 years ago, I started working for Liquid Robotics, handling all of Asia. I was the managing director for Asia Pacific for them, and we grew it to where we had the largest fleets of robotic units in the world on the ocean. And then a couple years ago, a friend of mine came to me and said, look, this industry is exploding. We need a lot of technology. And one of the first things I saw, which was a problem, was the guarding space, because, you know, you have a manpower issue, very difficult to solve. You've got workers' compensation, you've got slip and fall, you've got all kinds of problems in the guard space that can be resolved if you had a robot that could respond to trigger points or to threat events. And so we've created that. And I've been working with Sharp Electronics and another robotics firm as well to create what we consider to be industry-leading standards for the robotic units to move forward.
So I had a guy on, let's see, when was that? I think it was just the other day, and he was talking about drones, right? So he said that the number one, and he knows a lot about drones, and he said the number one manufacturer of drones in the world is a Chinese company. I forgot what name it was. And, you know, he said you could go out and build a drone from Home Depot parts, and they've done that. They've showed pictures of ISIS with weapons on and stuff. What do you think about the ability to understand, you know, if that drone is made in China, why can't the Chinese just push a button one day and turn them all on and take off and do something? I mean, I think these worst case scenario things all the time, but I'm not comfortable having a foreign manufacturer that literally can put some backdoor chip on there and be able to control my drone. I don't know. Maybe, am I being paranoid or what?
No, I think you have a valid point. I think what we have to look at is how many of those devices are actually enabled through either GSM, so cellular, or GPS, so they could actually talk to it. A lot of those DJIs, the company you're thinking of probably, that's in Shenzhen, a lot of those devices are Wi-Fi enabled, or maybe even like close communication, so they may be able to talk to the phone. But realistically, they're not enabled enough now. I mean, people are not, let's call it, the government hasn't been sleeping at the wheel on this one so that they can let certain technology into the country. Now, conversely, your cell phone, and I don't know if you use a Samsung or an iPhone, but they're both manufactured in Asia, and somebody could say that I could turn your cell phone on and listen to your conversations right now and get data off your phone if I was a Chinese manufacturer.
Well, that's true. I mean, that is a valid point. I remember years ago, Lenovo had a computer that, and I don't think this was a military thing, but maybe more of a Chinese advertising thing. And they had some chip that the Chinese snuck in there, and the computer just went crazy on adware, and basically it created a back door and a portal to that machine. And then the State Department said, don't buy those anymore. And, of course, somebody didn't get the memo, and they bought them, right? And it really, in theory, gave us access to stuff. Do you remember that case? Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. There's actually been quite a few cases like that where they've actually looked at backdoors on not only laptops but other devices as well. So as devices become more connected, and we talk about this a lot, you can see how a network, let's say, for instance, your home, just the basics of your home, as you get a connected doorbell through Ring, you have a connected refrigerator through Samsung, you've got a connected washing machine for another reason, and you got another connected device. All those connected devices are on your own personal network. Now, imagine that if you had a corporation where you had thousands, literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, are all connected devices that at any one time could be turned on and wreak havoc on your network. So you need offensive cybersecurity and/or offensive network security to take a look at that. One of the best companies I found so far is a UK company called Darktrace. And Darktrace has an enterprise solution that's fantastic. It's used in a lot of big corporations. It was developed by the British military, and it's now deployed commercially. Another one that's for small businesses or for your own use could be something like Axiom Cybersecurity out of Las Vegas, where they've created a very similar system that's offensive in its defense. So it'll go out and look for Wi-Fi enabled devices on your network, or even at, I mean, if you had your office there and you're worried about somebody hacking into your office, it'll actually knock stuff down before it even gets to your network.
Oh, I've heard of them. Yeah. That is a good application. What I'm worried about is I wake up one morning at 3 o'clock and my refrigerator standing over my bed, and it's going to kill me because I didn't fill it up with eggs. All right.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people don't get that Internet of Things is fantastic. It's the most amazing time in history, but it's also freaking scary. So when I moved to the ranch in Arizona, sure, up on the hill, I'm going to be off the grid. I'm off the grid.
Well, you might as well not drive a new car either. You might as well go back to your 1970, you know, El Camino, or your 1962 Scout International, because the engines are now controlled by the chipsets, the onboard systems from all the GPS. I mean, if we knocked out our GPS system right now today, a lot of the world would come to a screeching halt.
Oh, I know.
Because the GPS system is enabling an awful lot of other transactions to happen.
Yeah.
So that's not even robotics.
Well, let's talk about the cars. The self-driving car is coming. Would the self-driving car be considered a robot? I guess it kind of would.
Yeah, in some respects, we're already working with a company to make our armored rigs autonomous.
Oh, really? Well, they've done a lot of those tests. Tell our listeners about the successes in that area. I know, didn't Google go a million miles without an accident or something? You cannot replicate that with humans. You just can't do it. That's impressive.
There's a bunch of different companies that have kind of worked into that space. Uber has been working very heavily on the space. Google's been doing an awful lot of work, and some of them are backing off because they spent way too much money and realized that they're going to be years before they're able to deploy anything.
Right.
Some of the major manufacturers now, like Mercedes-Benz, have what I might call semi-autonomous systems. Subaru, for instance, has the gate control where if you get outside of your gate by too far, it'll start to alert that you're going off tilt. So then it brings you back onto the other side. You may get too close to another vehicle and gets automatic stopping. Some of that's kind of annoying because you want to control your car, and actually the car is not letting you to do what you want to do.
Right.
So there are systems in place that are coming that'll be slow adoption, but there is a time frame in the next few years when you will see autonomous cars that will kind of get into a path and allow for autonomous driving, because it's just a more expedient way to do things.
Now, do you think that will be like it always is? The rich guy buys the Tesla, and then 5 years later, a similar car costs $20,000. Is it going to be the rich guy buys the self-driving car so he doesn't have to worry about going to work, and he can work in his back seat, and then it rolls out? I mean, are we close to having the ability to run a private self-driving car?
We're close.
Very interesting. Very interesting. All right. What else is what else can you scare the crap out of us with the robots? tell us some good robot stories.
I look at what we've done already, and we've been able to secure both town, municipality, city approvals for where we're going with the robots already. We've been able to get support from major manufacturers. We've done some pretty good positive impact on local communities with these bots that we're deploying. I'd like to see that happen for other industries. Security guards as an industry is just one example. You could go after a lot of dumb, dull, dirty work that people are getting themselves away from. One of the guys I really love is Mike Rowe, right? He talks about America and dirty jobs.
Oh,
and
yeah.
What? And he's fantastic. And he's talking about how our skill sets are getting outdated. That's very true. So what we need to do is we need to work away from or teach our young people, look, maybe you want to learn how to fly the drone. Maybe you want to learn how to repair the drone. Maybe you want to learn how to become a software programmer for all of the robotics, because there's where the careers are going to be. Not necessarily the guy that's out picking flowers in the middle of the hills in California.
Well, this is what I'm worried about, and I talk about this on all my shows. It keeps me awake a little bit. My parents didn't raise any dumb kids, okay, but I'm no genius, but I kind of get how things work. I understand computers. I'm pushing all the buttons here on this radio show, doing all this stuff. I guess I would be an expert compared to 90% of the people in the world, but I don't feel that way. And, you know, if we start transplanting people with all these robots, what are you going to do with all the people that can't work, don't have a skill, need food? You know, there's going to be some point where you switch from having the idea of utopia where robots will take care of us, but that has to create a false economy. You still need good old-fashioned, you know, buy low, sell high. You know, I manufacture something, you buy it. Robots would turn us all into what? Socialists? These are all political questions I think about when you come up with robots. There's a shortage of what? 1 million qualified IT professionals right now. It's an industry where there's zero unemployment, literally. So I don't know. I'm not sure if we can train the next generation to get their nose out of their iPhone and learn a technical skill. Because in that world, almost everybody would have to have a technical skill in one way. Am I wrong?
I think you're close. I think probably what's going to end up happening is we have to retrain our educational system to be able to put forward. Remember the trade schools? We lost trade schools.
Oh,
we really don't have a lot of really good CNC shop. You know, if you ask a kid nowadays what a CNC lathe is, or you ask them how to go take apart something, and they're going to look at you like you've got two heads. And Radio Shack is gone. I mean, you've got no way to really manufacture your own stuff in the United States. They had a maker movement in the United States that's been going on for a little while, but even that maker relationship is very small. It's diminutive. You don't have a lot of really forward-thinking people that go out there and show these kids, hey, look, you know what? At 18 years old, you have the opportunity. You can join the military, you can go to college, or you can create a business, or you can do nothing and play on your iPhone. The worst thing in the world we can do is keep enabling people with a titled system that they can become 18 years old and then go out and get no job. That's not the right way to go. And that's what I think I really like Mike Rowe about. And I like people that like yourself that are thinking, we eliminate all these jobs. Where are we going to get the next set of jobs? And that's where we have to be more creative and find other industries. Say, for instance, in Elon Musk is creating those solar panels for roofs.
Right.
Well, all those solar panels are not going to go on themselves.
Well, they could eventually with the right robot. I've seen some robots installed
robots,
and stuff.
You know.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Sure.
But I think it's a serious question. And, you know, in all technology, sometimes the law is way behind the technology. The society is way behind the technology. Mm-hmm. And I think we got to be very careful with that kind of stuff. It really could turn the whole world into something else. Mm. I mean, are we going to get to the point where we are literally the matrix, where the machines are manufacturing other machines and we're not significant? It literally could do that. It's all theoretically possible.
Sure. Theoretically possible. I also think we've got a lot of other issues before we get there. I mean, the planet itself is in pretty bad shape and we keep screwing that up. So, I mean, we have other issues we have to fry first, I think. But yeah, I do agree with you.
Very interesting. Well, Todd, this has been a fascinating conversation. Give us your website, how we can get a hold of Robe Alliance and maybe get a hold of you. Tell our listeners how they can get more interest in this. And investors, you know, if you guys want to invest in robots and Robo Alliance and the industry for protection, Todd be the guy to call, right?
Yeah, Robo Alliance is a set of individual companies. We're pretty spread within industries. We've got agricultural, industrial, commercial, manufacturing, all types of different industries in the Robo Alliance, but they are all interested in robots. Our company is Hardcar Security, based out of California, and we're in the medical cannabis space, like I said, and we're growing like crazy, growing like a weed.
That's a perfect way to end the show. Todd, thanks for coming on Security Guy TV. Till next time.
Thanks. Have a great day.
All right.